hot mix. Not 100% sure what happened there, but it's all right. Rokan, show off for another day of broadcast insolence. And let's get right to it. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 879 points. That's almost 2,000 points over 2 days, because he had 1,031 yesterday. And we were sitting at the precipice of 29,000 and, you know, heading, everybody's thinking, oh, we're going to go past 30,000 on the Dow. And now it's just hovering over 27,000. And people are freaking out. It's the coronavirus. At least that's what the theory is with the markets. You're never 100% sure. Chris Everett was with us. She's a financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park. And Chris, thanks so much for being with us. Can I play something for you first? I want to play Larry Kudlow, right?
He's a
big financial guy for the White House, is he not? You remember him from CNBC? All right. So I want to play the second cut here. He's talking about the effect of the coronavirus on the economy.
The business side and the economic side, I don't think it's going to be an economic tragedy at all. There'll be some stumbles. We're looking at numbers. It's a little iffy. We might have a clearer picture in the next 2 to 3 weeks. But at the moment, the numbers that we're looking at on all these Federal Reserve regional ISMs, today's consumer confidence number, right. There's no supply disruptions yet.
All right. What do you think, Chris?
So I agree with him. I am actually, and I love this, to buy on sale. So I've been looking at charts, and I'm looking for gaps and places to go in and buy on the cheap. You can actually program in your sale price now. This is a good market. Now, that's not to say that people aren't afraid. I get that. People are overreacting.
My mother.
Or maybe, what they're doing? They're reacting to what they don't know.
Right. But also the institutional guys, some people are coming off. Obviously, there's big moves here. This isn't just the average consumer of stocks is deciding, okay, I'm a little nervous here.
And the volume is really not that high, to be honest with you. And so I think it's true that some institutional players have started trimming. That's just wisdom. But in terms of, like, let's say here you are now after, you know, falling for 4 days in a row, and you're like, what am I going to do? Well, I would ask you back, where are you in your life? Are you getting ready to retire next week or in the next 5 to 8 years? Well, you know, we should have been thinking about this a little bit sooner, right? Starting to pull some things off to the side. But if you've got a long way to go, this is a sale of a lifetime.
Yeah, this is a good market for that. You're 100% right about that. I agree that if you've got some money set aside, you got some stuff in cash and you want to move it, it probably has a little bit more to go. What would you say?
I'm saying that there's a gap, a clear gap at 26.5, let's round it up, 26.5 on the Dow. So it could go down just another, you know, 400 or 500 points, but that's just another 1.8%.
Right,
so you've already lived through this. Maybe there's just a little bit more to go.
Don't panic is what you're saying, Chris Everett.
Don't panic.
Don't panic.
Be a sale buyer.
Yes, I'm panicking. I panic about everything, but not about this. I haven't touched any of that.
No.
No, why would I? All right, Chris Everett, financial planner, president of Everett Wealth Solutions. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Welcome.
All right, let's check in with Lauren Lapka. What's happening on the roads and the skies?
When home rehab dreams turn into a nightmare, how did a suburban man's plan to fix up abandoned houses go so wrong? WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9.
That's a great question. I would like to know how did it go so wrong?
We'll find out at 9.
Well, I guess Ben, I don't know if Ben Bradley knows that. He's on the WGN-TV news starting at 4. And he's got my favorite story of the day, Blago's lawyers in court asking to get his law license back.
I feel like we should do this in your Chicago lawyer accent, although Sheldon Cerusky does not have an accent.
No.
But don't let that stop us. Okay?
Your Honor, my client in this particular case is wrongly accused, wrongly convicted. It was a Hummer case.
It was well within the legal bounds. And here's a direct quote.
Mm-hmm.
The crimes that Mr. Blagojevich Chich was convicted of are meager, meager forms of corruption.
It's not right. It's like corruption light.
Yes,
Your Honor. It's not real corruption.
It's like a murder that doesn't hurt that much.
Right.
You know?
He didn't kill nobody. Yeah. I mean, he attempted to. He's not so good at it. He'd be a better lawyer, though. You should make him a lawyer.
Keep in mind, Blagojevich ran, is in part, on the fact that he was a former Cook County assistant state's attorney.
Oh, yeah.
But he basically was in traffic court.
Right. He didn't appear very much. I knew a bunch of guys who were in the office with him at the time, mm-hmm. in the state attorney's office, and they all tell the same story. it was a guy that his whole career is sort of marked by this notion of, I'll get to it.
I didn't see him very much.
Yeah, that right. People couldn't identify when he was actually there. But I'm sure. I'm going to turn a new leaf on this.
Oh.
Yeah. Watch this. Anderson Cooper did what all of us wish we could have done. He did it. He actually said the BS word on television and told Blagojevich he was full of it, and that all of this, you can make up all of an alternative universe you want to make up and tell us that none of this ever happened, even though we heard it with our own earballs. You can tell us this until the cows come home, and it does not matter, because the reality is it happened. You said it. It's on the tape. We know what happened. You were convicted, and not only were you convicted, but on the appeal, the judge pulled out one of the criminal convictions and almost gave you more time.
Yeah.
That's the only time you've ever seen that. They didn't give him less time, but the guy goes, hey, I could have given him 60 years.
And in front of the Illinois Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Commission today, Blagojevich's attorney also blamed the media for saying that we made too much of those FBI recordings.
Oh.
You know the recordings where we heard Blagojevich in his own words?
Well, all right. Now, you know what their argument, though, is? And I like Sheldon Sorotsky a lot. He's a great lawyer. But as most of these guys are. And let me tell you something. If you're ever in trouble, there's a lot of lawyers here in town that could be very helpful, and he's one of them. But the one thing that they argue, and the one thing that Blagojevich argues and that his wife argues, is that, he's thinking out loud. He's talking about things. When he's talking about it being effing golden, he may just be talking about trading it for a political favor, which is log rolling, and actually that's the charge. That's the conviction that was thrown out by the appellate court, because that was a look, right? At that, which was, I guess, theoretically, he didn't, because there was no exact dollar amount asked for. But then the boards, that's the other problem. When he was talking about getting his wife on boards for $50,000 a pop, the paid boards, what is he doing there? What does he need that for? Right. Is he not going to give the Senate seat? Where does that go?
But, a decade later, when you think you've heard, every allegation in this case, et cetera, I have to hand it to the folks at the Illinois Attorney Registration
ARDC.
And Disciplinary Commission, because they actually came up with, I think, the perfect two words to describe what Blagojevich has done. Moral turpitude. And I had to look it up. A phrase used in criminal law to describe conduct that is considered contrary to community standards of justice, honesty, or good morals.
Really? Well, I would say.
So that's
I
that.
Never knew what that
May
was.
We
I used
never
that term
speak.
A lot. I never knew what it actually meant.
May we never speak or have to spell Blagojevich again.
Oh, Ben.
A man can dream, Ro.
Yes.
Speaking of dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I had a dream vacation with you, 48 hours in Central America.
Yes.
Let's start. We promised listeners that we would talk about this trip and how it went. First of all, I'd like to acknowledge that we're both alive. We're both still friends.
But clear, yeah.
And
this happened 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we could talk about it till everybody got back in the country.
Safely.
Yeah.
Right. So the trip starts as we're headed over the Gulf of Mexico with Ro was sitting one row behind me in the window seat, so kind of trapped like an animal to begin with. When I see out of the corner of my eye, the stranger sitting next to Ro straps on a coronavirus mask.
Yeah.
And I turn around to noted germaphobe Ro Khan, and his eyes were popping out of their sockets.
It was funny that when we were on the ground, the guy didn't have the mask on.
No, only after they had sealed you in.
Right. As soon as the door closed, he pops the mask on. And I'm looking, and all of a sudden now I'm like, oh no. Now, is he wearing the mask because he's got it? Or is he afraid I've got it? I know I don't have it, so that's going to be good.
But you were a little sweaty.
Yeah.
Well, we'd gotten up early that morning, Ben. Sorry. We had, it's one of those things where we had to change planes and go back, down to the parts of Central America that we, and I was nervous because we were told when we landed there in the city, can we say where, is this all right?
Sure.
In Guatemala City. When we landed in Guatemala City, we were told by the people who are putting this event together, don't get in a cab, whatever you do.
So the front of the wedding invitation was like the parents of so-and-so cordially invite you, flowery love, honor, blah, blah, blah. Turn the invitation over and said, whatever you do when you land, don't get in a cab, don't accept a ride from anybody. Please book all transportation in advance.
Right, through this one group. And so we book it through the group, and the guy didn't show up for a while. And and when he finally did, he had a van for like 12 people, and there were 14 of us in the traveling party.
Yeah.
Not everybody going to the same place, but 14 people waiting for this
van. And
it was
like his family's minivan, and it was so beautiful because it was this guy and his wife who were clearly renting their minivan to, for transportation.
Yes, safe.
And the highlight came when the guy boosts his wife up onto the roof and is literally tying all of our luggage, like Rose Louis Vuitton bags and everything like that, to the roof.
You're making fun of me.
And Rose like, I may need something out of there.
Ben Bradley, you're making fun of me now. Yeah, well, and the 40-minute ride that we're supposed to take took 3 hours. And I don't know if we can tell this part of the story, but I'm going to do it anyway. We were with another guy who shall remain nameless, who we had been drinking in the airport and thought that maybe there would be, and on the plane, and we thought it would be a 40-minute ride. We'll be fine. In the 3 hours of rush hour, Guatemala City rush hour traffic on a Friday afternoon, he had to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, and he's over 50, and he's trying to communicate to the other guy in the van who we don't know. He's going to a different, wedding or resort or something like that. And this guy is trying to ask the one guy who speaks Spanish in the van to communicate the urgency with which we need to pull over. And the other guy's unhappy and refusing to translate for us.
Yes, it was very bad. So our friend ended up in traffic, opening the van door while it was moving, running out of the van, running across the traffic.
It was like Frogger.
And then going to a dumpster and then coming back. And then he would run down this, Guatemala 1 or whatever the hell the name of the highway was.
Five lanes in each direction, no vehicle moving faster than 3 miles an hour.
Right. And we'd catch up. And I thought, we are going to get locked up abroad here.
The first time he did it, I was like, wow, that was impressive. He made it back. But he did it two more times on the drive.
Right. So anyway, it's exactly everything I was afraid would happen. But I got to say, the people in Guatemala were incredibly nice.
Beautiful, in a beautiful place. The mountains were beautiful.
Yeah.
Cobblestone streets everywhere, which was not so great with a recently broken ankle. Thank you to Ro for carrying me everywhere.
I've been carrying you for years, Ben.
Yes. But the bride and groom said I do. Everybody was happy. It was a beautiful occasion, and nobody wandered off, as can sometimes happen on these trips. I was impressed, Ro. You handled every ounce of adversity
that came at me
far better than I would have thought.
Yes.
I said to my wife,
it turned out I was the adult. That's the crazy thing.
I said to my wife before I left, I said, Ro and I are leaving friends. I don't know what we'll return as, or if one of us will return.
Right. That's really true.
Yeah.
But we did. It worked out. It worked out okay. And between you and our other friend, who, at some point were just uncontrollable, I was the one that had to keep us from getting kidnapped. I will say this, though. It was a beautiful wedding, and it was an amazing moment, but a shot rang out at the reception. So here we are in Guatemala City, and all of a sudden, you hear, out of nowhere...
But it was enough off in the distance that everyone kind of noticed it, but nobody wanted to ruin the moment. The reception was underway, et cetera.
Yeah.
And so nobody said anything about it. We all did the, beautiful wedding. The bride looks great. Thanks for having us. Fast forward to yesterday, and the groom on the group text sent, hey, just wondering, did you all also hear the gunshot?
We were all trying to ignore it because there's a bunch of people. There were military people there, and there were government people. There were all kinds of people. And there were people that would be, responding to that. And there was a bit of a security threat with this. We were told in advance when we were going down that because of the nature of this wedding and who was actually getting married, that there was going to be the potential for, that
it all went well.
Yes, yeah, so there might have been a problem.
And only lost one bullet that wound up in the sky someplace.
I understand. I was told that it was the a Guatemalan police officer who was reholstering his pistol. And then it went off. And I'm just trying to imagine how that possibly could have happened. But anyway, that's it. Yep. That was our thing. I know. Thank you for posting a picture of Ben Bradley from WGN TV.
Yes.
Thank you for posting a picture on your Twitter feed of me in the back of the airplane with a guy sitting next to a guy in a Corona mask.
It's also on my Facebook.
Oh, thanks.
I'll put it on MySpace as well.
My phone has just lit up. I got a call from a friend in Washington.
Oh, no.
So this thing has now moved around a little bit and was like, hey, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I don't know, because I almost died. All right.
Alrighty.
What is happening on the WGN TV news other than Blago?
The latest on the snow, Tamon Bradley will have the Blagojevich Law License battle. And I've got a one-on-one.
Before you get to the one-on-one, where does that leave us right now?
No decision yet on the Blagojevich Law License.
And the ARDC, this is the group that would
attorney,
do this.
Yeah.
Right, the Attorney Review Board. They would have the right to reinstate his license?
Yes, or keep it.
He's a convicted felon.
I wouldn't worry about it. I don't think he's going to be practicing anytime soon.
I don't know. I would love to have him have his law license back. I want him to. Now that he's out, what are we going to do? It's like he's out. He's part of this kind of. There's an entire group of people that are just kind of rewriting the facts.
Yeah.
And he's part of it. And so that's what he is. It is going to be very entertaining. But I want him to make money so that he can get out of the, you know.
Yeah,
just because stay out of all of our ways.
Exactly.
Love him to be happy doing something else.
We wish him nothing but the best.
Yes.
Today at 4, one-on-one with FBI's new Chicago boss. We talk political corruption. Also, his roots in the Inglewood neighborhood. He went to Lynn Bloom High School. Uh-huh. First African-American to lead the FBI in Chicago. So we'll have that interview for you today at 4 on WGN.
All right. Thank you very much, Ben Bradley.
Glad we both survived, bro.
Thank you. Yes, it's 3:30 and neither of us have the coronavirus. But here's Kim Gordon. She's got the WGN news. Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. Here's our guy, Demetrius Ivory. And, you know, you were saying yesterday to us from WGN TV Weather, you were saying to us, look, this storm has some dynamics to it. It may not be what we think it's going to be, and you're right.
Yeah, I hate this thing.
Because it's unpredictable, right?
No. You know, so growing up as a forecast, you know, I'm from Ohio, I'm from Cleveland, so... a lot of forecasters, when we're in school, they really get into severe storms. They really get into tornadoes. Other people get into hurricanes and things like that. I was a winter storm guy because I loved them because you could always see them coming. They never snuck up on you, and they were very reliable. Not this year.
No. Well, not here for sure.
No.
Right?
Well, it's not just here. This year. This year we just haven't had, well, this season I'm going to say, we just haven't had very good model guidance with a lot of these. This storm went way south. The models kind of got a hold of it on Monday, but you're still a day and a half away from it coming. So now the snowfall forecast, which was a good forecast at 4 to 8 into yesterday, is now down to, you know, maybe, you know, maybe 1 in some areas, maybe 4 in other areas.
So what is wrong with the models at this point? What is it because of we've had a wacky winter. It's been a warmer winter. It's been a drier winter by and large. We had that cold snap around Halloween and mm-hmm. snow around Halloween, but we've really not had anything significant since then, and either cold or snow a little bit. But not much.
I would think it might be the other way of looking at it. What's wrong? Well, not wrong, but what's going on with the weather? I mean, our biggest snowfall this season, 4.5 inches. And like you said, that was Halloween. That wasn't even, you know.
Right.
That was fall, you know. So I think that, you know, what the computers are doing is saying, hey, it's winter. It's Chicago. This is what you get. But we just keep kind of getting the lower numbers.
It's just these things are petering out, or they're heading south.
Yeah, it's
or
just
there's warmer air cutting them off, right? Is that the issue?
And well, in this case, this was kind of a complex. It was complex, and I hate saying complex, but it was basically two systems coming together, basically directly over us. Now that's not really the case. Most of the action is south. There's a disturbance out to our southwest. It's really just clobbering portions of western Kansas, and keeping all the snow to itself. So it's just one of those things where the models aren't going to be all right, and for them to make that pivot Sunday, and we're talking about now is, you know, almost a success, because you're still talking about 2 days out, you know, the models did get, say, hey, this thing's turning south, and they got that. But, you know.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just go through what is going to happen tonight. So,
I feel like you're my kindergarten teacher.
Okay, Demetrius. Okay, now we're gonna. I'm giving you this construction paper, and I want you to cut a cloud out of it and let us know what's going to happen. So south of I-80, right? It's gonna still be. Think maybe and toward the lake, toward northwest Indiana, there is going to be some lake effect snow, and that's where you get your 4 inches.
The six, maybe as much as six, as you get into northwest Indiana. And this is going to be carried through early tomorrow morning where we get a lake effect push. So the high number would be six across northwest Indiana, like you said, I-80. Those numbers will basically fall or diminish as you move north to around 1 inch or so, maybe not even an inch, as you get right at the Wisconsin state line. So that would put the city of Chicago kind of in that 1 to 4 inch range.
Will there be lake effect?
There will be some. There will be lake effect into tomorrow, or late tonight and tomorrow. Yeah. Okay. So we do. So you know, we have the snow in. It's going to change over quickly. We have the snow in probably into the city shortly, but I'd say, you know, to be safe, 7 p.m. Winter weather advisory goes in effect at 6 p.m. And then after that, we'll be looking at snow tonight until probably early tomorrow morning, and then we dry out.
So what's falling now as I look at downtown Chicago?
Generally, rain in downtown Chicago, south and west of the south side, I think south of 100, I think it's 120th, it's snow right there. And then as you continue into northwest Indiana, Valparaiso, they were looking at some ice a moment ago. Now they're looking at some snow there.
Right. But it's still going to be messy travel here, right? This water the water looks rather solid to me, but it doesn't look like snow. It's going past my window.
Don't we sound like a couple of physicists here?
Yeah, that's right. Well, it looks a little like glass shards as it's moving. So I'm just wondering if a window went out above. But is this going to be ice? I mean, let's talk about travel conditions here, because that's the most important thing for people.
Right. I don't think much in terms of ice tonight. Remember, the ground is way too warm. So you may get some of that ice accumulation on your window, but not so much on the ground. We got to wait until the ground cools down, which isn't going to be until later tonight. So we'll see snow, maybe even during the rush hour commute, tail end of the rush hour commute this evening, which visibility would be a bigger issue there. Okay. Valparaiso is down a half mile. But the snow shouldn't start to stick until well after sunset, after the ground cools down. And then it's going to be more like kind of a wake up in the morning. Now, I do think tomorrow's rush is going to be, we're going to have some trouble there, because then you're going to be talking about, well, everybody wants to go everywhere, plus you have the snow on
right.
the ground.
Okay. All right. So the disaster moved from this afternoon to tomorrow morning, potentially.
Yeah.
And I use disaster loosely all the time. So don't worry when I say disaster. I just mean tough travel times.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Okay. Can I get my snack and
yeah,
nap time?
You know what? You go on the third cot over there from the left, and I'm going to bring you a juice box. Thank you, Demetrius Ivory. All right. We got the traffic and the weather with Lauren Lapka. But before I do that, let me just tell you that coming up on the other side of this, we are going to be talking to the coronavirus doctor expert about what this all means, because obviously the country's getting a little nervous about it. The markets are getting nervous about it. And what does this mean for the Olympics, too? We have somebody who's going to weigh in on that. They may have to move or cancel the Summer Olympics this summer. Lauren? Robcon Show on 720 WGN. All right, so today the CDC is saying that Americans should prepare for the coronavirus to become a crisis in the United States. It's not so much a question of will this happen, but rather more a question of exactly when this will happen and how many people in this country will have severe illness. That's according to the head of the CDC in a briefing earlier this morning. So we need some context here, and we need some expert opinion. Igor Koralnik is with us. We've spoken with the doctor before. He is a neuroinfectious specialist at Northwestern Medicine. And, doctor, thank you so much for being with us. Is this...
Hi, Rule. How are you?
Okay. So do you believe that what we're hearing here from the CDC is true, that this is a matter of when, not if?
I think that the CDC is doing a very good job informing the public, and there was press briefing also by member of the Food and Drug Administration, the National Institute of Health, and other agencies, just to keep everybody informed about the situation all over the world and also in the U.S. And I think that they're taking appropriate measure to be prepared if and when this happens here in the U.S. as well.
So What do you think is actually going to happen here? Because there's a lot of people, especially on the political side, that are saying, hey, this may be overblown. Don't worry about it. It's going to get warmer in the spring, and that's going to kill the virus, or you know, or these things burn themselves out. From a guy who watches these vectors, what do you think is going to happen?
So this is true that there's a lot of things we still don't know. But, for example, from the previous epidemics of coronaviruses, the SARS epidemic, had 8,000 cases. The MERS epidemic had 2,500 cases. And after that, the epidemic died off or people became immune. And we have seen some other seasonal occurrence with the virus. With the COVID-19, the novel coronavirus, we still don't know when the epidemic will stop. Obviously, measures of containment are very important to prevent community acquisition of the virus. And it is not clear if it's going to be seasonal, like the flu, only occurring during the cold weather, or if it's going to carry out up to the next season. People want to be ready for it to carry over, to the next season.
There are some people who are saying in the press and other places that the coronavirus is nothing more than a bad cold.
Well, if you put it in perspective, the flu season, just the recent flu season in the U.S., caused about 19 million illnesses, 180,000 hospitalizations, and more than 10,000 deaths just in the U.S. alone.
Right, this year, right.
Yeah, and so, and despite the fact that we are aware of the flu and there are vaccines, against the flu. So it's true that for the majority of people affected by the coronavirus, they have no symptoms or minor symptoms. About 25% of those affected still required hospitalization, sometime in the ICU. And there's about between 2 and 3% fatalities, right? So, yes, if it happens to you and you're part of those who are severely affected, it is a terrible disease. Right. But for the majority of people who will be infected by the virus, they will do fine.
Right. Like a lot of these viruses, just sort of it's luck of the draw in a lot of respects in terms of how your body handles these things. And is it also based on the viral load, about how much exposure you have to it?
So this is not clear at this point, because it's such a new epidemic that there hasn't been any research done at that level. But it's probably because of the susceptibility of the host, and if you're older and you have some other comorbidities and you're more frail in a sense, your immune system is down, then it's likely to affect you more than if you're young and healthy.
Got it. Dr. Igor Koralnik from Northwestern Medicine. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
Talk to you again soon. Thank you. All right. Well, now that's part of the story, which is that it is around the world, spreading around the world. It's not really spread very wide here in the United States yet. The people who are coming off the quarantine now, there's another couple days left of the quarantine for those people who came off that cruise ship that are both quarantined in Texas and in California. We'll talk to this. One of them is a regular appearer on this show. We'll talk to her tomorrow, see how that is going. But so far, not a lot of cases here, and no fatalities. It is different in Iran, though, and I want to play this for you. This is the Iranian health minister yesterday doing a segment on Iranian national television about the coronavirus. Turns out today he tested positive for the coronavirus.
Was he coughing on everyone?
Yes. I mean, think about that for a second. All right, now, the other question that people are asking today, and it's worth asking, is what happens to the Olympics? Because when all the people from around the world, from almost every country in the world, show up in Tokyo for the Olympics, and Japan already does have a bit of a corona outbreak, not as bad as South Korea, but it is starting in Japan. What happens there? Is there time to move it? Will they move it? Should they cancel it? And Sydney Borum is with the Washington Post. She's a sports reporter, and you're covering this story today. What do you think is going to happen?
I wish I had a magic eight ball and I could tell you. You know, at the moment, nobody knows what's going to happen with this disease. It's spreading rapidly in Italy. You will have soccer games played before empty stadiums coming up, big, you know, important soccer games.
Is that intentional where they're going to not have crowds there? They're telling people to stay home, they'll just watch it on TV?
Yeah, they're not going to let people in.
Yeah.
You know, that's happened at times here in the past with, you know, measles, things like that, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. But, you know, it's also spread, of course, in Iran. And in Italy, it just took off. Really kind of spread exponentially in the last 24 hours or so. And of course, to get back to the Olympics, the problem is it's a global issue. You have all sorts of events leading up to it because, you know, you don't just show up for the Olympics.
Right.
You have qualifying tournaments, et cetera. Teams in Japan, teams in China are playing their tournaments in, I think one of the Chinese teams was kept in Australia to play there, you know, and they're the home team. They're playing South Korea, but, you know, they can't go back, so they have to play there. And, you know, there's a berth in the Olympics on the line. So, you know, these things will be taking place. And the other thing is, you know, I don't mean to be too alarmist about this because there's so much we don't know. But, you know, the Olympics have to Olympic officials have to take a sober look at this. And they've determined that, you know, they've probably still got about a 3-month window until the end of May to make a decision if something had to happen.
And about 30 seconds left. Does that mean it's a decision about canceling them or moving them?
It most likely would be cancellation. Moving them to a different venue isn't really possible, and moving them on the international sports calendar isn't really possible.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Cindy Borum from...
Unthinkable.
I know, for the Washington Post. Yeah, things happen that we never thought we'd ever see in our lifetimes, and we're seeing them. So, Cindy, appreciate your time. We will look at this in a different way in the 4 o'clock hour, actually, or in the 5 o'clock hour. Peter Greenberg's going to join us to talk about if you are thinking about going on spring break, now you don't want to go on spring break, how do you get your money back? That's going to be after 5:30 coming up. But we got the news for the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom in 2.
Chicago's very own WGN Radio Chicago.
Well, it's all going apart, whether we like it or not. Best I can tell, the world's gone to hell, and we're all gonna miss it a lot.
Well, the numbers are in, and it turns out that in the state of Illinois, they have already brought in $10 million in weed taxes. That is a pretty amazing number. And it's not even March yet. Now, think about that. Now, where's that money going? And if there are places that, you know, the way that the state operates in these kinds of things is they always give you a bunch of like, well, it's going to go to help the children, and then it's going to help the elderly, and then it's going to help all the sick people. And they try to work on our heartstrings, and it turns out it goes into some sort of something that it goes into the general fund because they're taking it out of somebody else's fund, you know? And so that it's like, I never know what to believe when I see these things. But I will say this, I like the number. And our guy, Andy Seeger, he's our pot guru. He's the king of pot, as far as I'm concerned. he's got some other numbers too about job opportunities, right? And things that are happening here in Illinois because there's a white collar job boom because of the green.
There's an every collar job boom because of the green.
So
green collar job boom.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's the green collar. Now we'll get to because downstate there's a lot of grow facilities, right? And they're looking for people who have cultivating skills.
Yeah,
right. Let's talk a little bit about that first.
Sure.
So what what is it? Farmers? Is it farm hands? I mean, who's getting employed down there?
I mean, it is everything. You go to some of these conventions, and big agriculture is there. HVAC and heating, lighting, glass manufacturing for the grow houses. Every sort of ancillary business is getting a boom from this. You know, if you were in HVAC sales, why wouldn't you call up every cultivator that's about to get a license? So there's a bunch of economies around.
How many are
campus
coming online right now?
Of cultivation. Yeah. It's still restricted to just the medical ones that are expanding. And then we just opened up 40 licenses for craft growers that are kind of restricted to 14,000 square feet of canopy space, so grow space.
Right.
So a very limited amount of space. But some of these big guys have hundreds of thousands of square feet or millions of square feet in Canada of grow space. So that's where the scale is. But, you know, the
and that will get bigger as this is like toes in the water right now.
Yeah, we're at like the hockey stick inflection point, if we'll take that analogy.
Oh, I like that.
I mean, like, it's just
it's a hockey
on
town.
The way up.
Yeah.
This is only going forward. So any type of job, if you're already doing a job, it's likely in cannabis as well. So the farming, the farm hands, agriculturally, the strains, high-end science, all the way up there, that cultivation definitely has a ton of opportunity in it.
Right.
There is supply chain issues and logistics and transportation. There is people management and skill management at retail. There's just basic retail. There is every sort of job in this industry.
Does Andy, this may seem like a bizarre question, but it just occurred to me that this is a real boon to like the glass roof industry, right?
It's a boon to a ton of industries
that you'd
that.
Never think about,
like the ancillary
glazers and all that stuff.
Yeah, big ag is coming for this. I mean, it's a lot of guys in blue shirts and black slacks at a lot of these conferences that used to be at, you know, the dry agricultural conferences, and now they're at a cannabis conference. They're there to set up this industry as a legitimate industry. So the
when
more they get into the industry, it also legitimizes the industry if we recognize it as helping grow the culture and the people.
How can Illinois, because we could use a little help here on some things, Andy. I don't know if you're familiar.
A lot of things.
Yes, we got a few problems.
Backlog of things.
Yes. So let's just say that, you know, economic growth is and becoming known for something and reestablishing the brand. Obviously,
yeah.
Financial services and stuff like that. All the Chicago big stuff.
Sure.
But hard and heavy manufacturing is, you know, it's in flux.
Yeah.
Thank God we got in Bloomington. You got, you know, two new car factories that are
sure.
going up, and you got there are some green shoot moments here in the state of Illinois. But the real green shoot, I think, can come from this.
Yeah, absolutely. Up and down the state, you know, Chicago has definitely become a hub of cannabis, not just in the Midwest, but in the country.
Could Illinois lead the nation in a lot of ways here?
In a lot of ways, yeah. I mean, we are a CPG hub. That's why we're seeing a lot of white collar jobs flocking to this industry. Green Thumb Industries is here. Cresco is here. Some of the biggest players are here in Chicago, taking advantage of the Chicago talent that comes from big CPG. My background is in beer. I worked for Constellation and Miller Coors. It's kind of a close jump to jump into cannabis, but we're seeing people from all the big CPGs here of Jim Beam and Wrigley, all of these people are getting in because their skills are required in cannabis. Cresco's big enough now that it needs a finance department.
Andy, hold on 1 second. We'll come back. We'll talk about this. And if people have questions about jobs
yep.
in the pot world, Andy can answer them. 312-981-7200. You're looking for another job? You want to be in the marijuana business? I think it's a growth industry. There's no question about it. And you won't feel like you're growing. You'll actually feel like you're floating, which is, I think, the most important thing. Here she is, Lauren Lapka, will tell us about the traffic and the weather, and we'll come back to your phone calls. 312-981-7200.
Well, they'll stone you when you're trying to be so good. They'll stone you just like they said they would. They'll stone you when you're trying to go home.
I love that part.
They'll stone you when you're there all alone.
Andy Seeger, the weed doctor, as we're calling him here, cannabis research manager at Brightfield Group. He's our weed expert. He's the weed editor of the Rokan Show, unpaid position. And this
pro bono.
We were talking about businesses, jobs, because obviously this has been a hit in Chicago and in the state of Illinois. So far, $10 million in taxes have been raised. I mean, that's on. Do we know total sales for the first 2 months or
not
almost
the first
2 months?
2 months. We know the first month was near 40. So this 10 is off of that.
It's off the 40 million.
And the products are all kind of mixed up in the terms of what they charge for taxes. So we can figure out what was sold and all that kind of stuff later. But this is a big number.
Right.
We know where it goes, that 35% to
the
general
fund.
Right.
Are we reporting? Are the stores reporting that they're holding these kinds of sales numbers in February?
Yeah, I think so. We're still in a supply shortage, so they're selling as much as they possibly can. So anything that comes to market is flying off the shelves. You know, this is still restricted by the amount of access that we have. It's just a very large medical market still at this time. We just don't tax some conditions.
Now, a lot of people want to know how they can make money out of this. Whether it's working in it or investing in it. I think you already know. Yeah, I think it's kind of working for you. Ollie, you're on WGN. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, hello. Love your show. Listen every day. My question would be, I've invested in some stuff probably about 6 months ago, maybe 9 months ago, and it is tanked. Are there any investment opportunities? Is there anything to watch for?
Ollie, can I just ask you, did you invest in the Canadian company?
Yes. I got a Tilray, I've got Canopy, and then I got an MTF, I believe it's called, MJ. All of it just, yeah. I mean, dumped. Okay. I mean,
now, we did talk about, hold on, this is a great question, because we addressed this with Andy last time we were talking to him. Explain a little bit about what happened there, Andy.
Yeah, so there was just kind of this bubble emerging early last year where there was a lot of liquidity in the market, a lot of venture capital, a lot of overhyped stock. A lot of mergers happening with big dollar numbers that really never make sense. So Canopy got bought by $4 billion worth of Constellation money. You know, that's right, a very, very large number.
Yeah.
That scared a lot of people in the industry because nobody ever thought that number would be achieved. So a lot of overvaluation happened, and then we saw the correction come in the second half of last year that really popped a lot of the value out of that. So a lot of these big companies are struggling. You know, they're laying off. They're having trouble writing checks, and we would have never thought that these companies would be in that kind of trouble. But the market did see that correction. So if you're investing, you kind of have to be in it for the long haul, and you have to diversify because we don't know who the winners are and losers are going to be yet. The market doesn't know. The state could do something completely different. New states could open up. New York could open up, and that vastly changes. Or federal legalization. So there's still a lot of unknown. And if you go forward and you invest kind of just generally, again, you can invest in ancillary services, HVAC, all the other things that we just talked about. You know, they're probably on the rise because of this. So there are ways to invest in this without investing in plant-touching things that are risky, because everything in this market is still very risky. Margins are very, very tight. Because regulations are very, very strict across a lot of markets.
Right. That will change over time here because upon the federalization of legal marijuana, that's going to take a lot of the handcuffs off.
Sure. Or just the expansion of the markets. You know, every market, every medical market, every adult use legal market is only expanding, only adding capabilities and access. It's not going backwards. So it's just going to be a matter of time until this grows up and is healthy, and we could be helped along by the federal government, but they seem reticent.
Ollie, does that help you?
Yes, thank you guys so much. That was awesome.
Okay, thanks. Joe, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, thanks for taking my call and talking about this. So I've been teaching kind of DIY classes, if you will, pasta making classes, how to make candles out of wine bottles. And tonight we actually have our very first how to make your own edibles class where we're showing extraction. And
I see some emergency room visits before this is all said and done. But
well, I already got it covered. We're using hemp-based CBD with less than 0.03 THC in there just because I thought that through.
Low and slow? Is that what it is? Isn't that, what's the term that you guys use?
That's very, very low. Yeah,
yeah, low and slow.
Hemp
all
is
right.
Very, very
yeah, so it's basically a CBD product, and it's more so just to show. And we're not even in these classes actually pushing the marijuana component. We're telling you you could do it with lavender or chamomile, but
sure.
We know, you know, what the ultimate goal of most folks are. So
yeah, we do.
That said, without trying to be the next Mindy Siegel and trying to get my own edibles line up there, and without getting paid, you know, minimum wage to do what I love to do as a chef, as a graduate of Kendall, I'm kind of looking at this and going, how do I, you know, where do I step
monetize.
Up? So teaching classes, obviously, is one of the ways, but where else?
Yeah, I think there are a ton of interest. Or there is a ton of interest in edibles. Edibles had a huge year in being able to increase their onset time, so it doesn't hit you the hour and a half later. It hits you a little bit more like a beer. It's not quite there yet, but bioavailability, so more of that THC gets absorbed, more of the stuff that gets you high. So edibles have come a really long way, and it's very science based now. That they're packaged and it's 100 milligrams of 10 gummies and you can reliably consistently trust that. So where you can fit in that space is all these people will need those kitchens and that experience of you know, what you seem to have in your background to find out how the emulsification techniques can be perfected and what products can come to market. So everybody out there with a brand idea probably needs somebody to help them make their product.
And where do they go for that?
That was my next question, because I have the brand idea, and it's just finding that, you know, it's trying to be that next chef who gets taken in by Cresco to say, you're going to be our new edibles person.
Sure.
And go.
Yeah. Or part of the team, yeah.
Or a smaller brand on your own. You know, there's a lot of incubators out there that are helping small and minority-owned businesses do these kind of things, make these brands, find kitchens like the Hatchery on the west side here that helps you know, youths develop kitchen and knife skills. So mm-hmm. there are different groups out there that are helping raise the education level and helping kind of network people together to create the culture to really support this industry. Because right now it is truly just transactional.
Is there a place on the web or somewhere else people can go and look for that?
There's a bunch of groups kind of doing a bunch of different things. You know, there's companies doing this. Toasted and Hosted is one that's kind of doing in-home and other some things. Edible companies of Wana and all of those that are here doing that. So you know, find the brands, look at other brands in other states, see what they're doing, and you'll see what types of positions are available there.
All right. I hope that helps.
Well, I'd love to have you throw me on hold and give my information to your producer and pass it along if
sure.
anybody needs my help out there.
Right,
I'm
sure.
definitely willing to help.
Okay. All right, I'm not coming to your kitchen yet.
Everybody needs help.
Isn't that the truth? All right, Joe, hold on one second. Andy Seeger, we're talking with him. He is from, he's a research manager, cannabis research manager at Brightfield Group, and he's our weed doctor. He's the guy who's in charge. I change your nickname every time you're on, but there's very few people right now who understand this business as well as you do. And it's fascinating to me that you came from the liquor business and the beer business, essentially, before coming into this. And it's the mechanics are very, very similar. And the mechanics from 100 years ago, or a little 90 years ago after Prohibition, this whole idea of taking it back out of the black and the gray market and moving it into the open market is the mechanics seem to be the same.
Yeah, they're very close, and there's a lot of differences. I really never thought I would use two economic degrees to get paid for weed, but here I am. And that
poop
goes,
happens.
Right, and that goes to what we said earlier of you can find your skills required in this market somewhere. You know, there's only going to be more access and availability. There's only going to be more. So the more that we can grow our culture, more that we can grow what we want out of this market, whether it's cafes or things outside of retail, we can still build that, and that's yet to come because this is still just the first stages.
And that would also require amendments to the law, right? Additional pieces to
the law
to have a cafe.
The law is going to get changed. You know, the law is going to continue to evolve. They're going to take bits and pieces from other markets that we've seen do successfully. We're going to add licenses for transportation and distribution and all sorts of other things. So this is only going to evolve and add more components, more intricacy, whether it's delivery, direct-to-consumer, online sales. Canada, you can get it shipped direct to your door next day. So what does that look like if that's implemented? So the state is going to look at that, but it's going to take a very, very hesitant, slow approach to implementing anything new.
I want to move back to something you were saying, though, about the edibles.
Sure.
Because this is the thing that when, people my age and older, I mean, there's guys in their, late 50s and 60s and 70s that are in this now, right?
Yeah.
And they smoked in the 60s.
The boomerangs, they're
right?
back.
They're back, exactly. But the edible was always the confounding thing because they don't want to smoke in their house. They don't want to necessarily.
But you don't know what's in your edible or how
right.
much it has.
Yes, and I will.
Everybody's got a bad story.
Yeah, I saw a bad story happen in front of me. A couple of friends of mine, we were at a sporting event. Yeah, and it was like, the guy goes, hey, I took a couple of edibles on the way here. And he's like a business guy. He's a business guy with like a really expensive car. And he couldn't drive his car out of the stadium parking lot because he took two because it was like, this wasn't enough. And then boom. And then the next one hit him. Right. And it's like, so that you're saying that's changing now.
Yes, and there's a lot of interest behind that. I mean, the beverage giants are here, the food giants are here to try to figure out how they can get you products down from really low doses, like 1 milligram, 2 milligrams in a gummy that you can pop and just hits you within 15 minutes and you feel that slight effect.
Mm-hmm.
Or drinks. You know, how do you get somebody into a cafe having a THC drink and keep them there for a couple hours like a bar? Is a bar experience something somebody wants?
Stoned, I guess? It's different than alcohol because it processes differently.
Slightly differently, right. So if we can increase that onset time, how quickly you feel it, and you have a 4 milligram THC drink, is that kind of equitable to a beer in a non-public setting?
But how it accumulates, because it doesn't, like, the processing is how it burns out in your system too. Right. It doesn't burn out the same rate that alcohol does because it's the sugar. So
That consumer education piece is big.
Yeah, that'd be
low
big.
And slow, learn what you're doing, learn what you want. But there's definitely this big movement behind how do we get products that people are already familiar with but have THC versions of them.
Andy Seeger, we'll talk to you again. He's the weed doctor, as far as you know. Cannabis research manager at Brightfield Group. We'll talk to you soon. Let's check in now with the WGN Radio Newsroom. Coming up after the 5 o'clock news, we will be telling you the three things you need to know at 5. The top 5 is taking a vacation right now, and so we're trying out a couple of other concepts. I love this one. You'll let me know what you think. But one of the interesting things about it is that it'll be 5 stories that you need to know, things you absolutely have to especially today, obviously weather being, a big one, and coronavirus being another one. Then in the right after the traffic and weather at the corner there, so right around 5:17, Peter Greenberg is going to join us. And Peter Greenberg, the travel expert, as you know him to be, he is he's got tips on how to get out of your spring break deals that you've already cut. Whether it's a resort deal or even airline deals, what can you do about it given the coronavirus? And people are freaking out. They're trying to get, they don't want to take their kids in places or on planes. So he's going to help us figure that whole thing out. So that's it. Now, speaking of planes and kids on planes, Alex Stone from ABC News has a story that goes right down that line. And this, Alex Stone, is long overdue. Explain it.
Yeah, so if you've been flying on a budget airline, let's say Spirit or Frontier, and now the mainline airlines, Delta, United, American, they've instituted the basic economy fare where you get practically nothing, including a seat assignment, unless you want to pay extra, can't bring on any kind of bag that's going to go in the overhead. The basic fare, well, the problem with those fares has been for families getting seats together, because you show up at the airport, you get what's available. Oftentimes, nobody's sitting together. You did get a great fare, but nobody's sitting together. Now, Consumer Reports, their advocacy arm, they've put a petition online that now has tens of thousands of people who have signed it for the government to impose a rule that would require airlines to put one parent with each child if it's not an unaccompanied minor, if there is a parent on board there. They have examples of one on an American Airlines flight, Dallas to Florida, where kids 2, 6, and 8 years old, they were all separated from their parents. They were all over the place. A 2-year-old, and the parents saying the 2-year-old never flown before, still in diapers, and that it's not reasonable that their baby was sitting with strangers on a 3-hour flight. Not fair for the baby, not fair for those strangers. Last thing you want to do when you sit down on a business trip is, who is this sitting next to me but a baby in diapers and there's no parent anywhere around? That,
that's not
quite the experience you want.
No, I totally understand that. I mean, I don't feel like that either. And I also don't like sitting next to the pet companion or whatever those things are now. It's like an ostrich that has special powers in case somebody starts to have a convulsion.
Or doesn't, but somebody bought the Amazon bib for it,
so
then they can sit there.
Yeah. Now, here's the question, though, is in situations like this, do you really need them to change the rules, or should there just be at the gate agent be required to try to smooth that over? Because the person who's going to be sitting next to the sit alone 2 year old would rather switch seats with that parent, one would imagine.
Yeah, typically, although you do get people who may say, no, I paid for an aisle or a window, and, you know, mom is back, the reason why they paid basic economy, so she's probably in a middle seat somewhere in the back that they may not want to go to. So the Department of Transportation, they have added a section on their family seating tips saying, don't buy basic economy tickets if you're a family. That's not what you want to do. Pay a little bit more. Buy a regular seat. Don't go on an airline that has that policy, or on the main line, be able to upgrade to a regular economy seat that isn't basic economy, so that then you can choose your seats ahead of time. Now, United says it is now scanning tickets beforehand, reservations beforehand, a couple of days before, to see, okay, are there any kids on board that aren't sitting with their parents? And then they try to move them around before it gets too tight. Now, there are cases that you book a flight and there just aren't any seats available. Everything is booked and there's only middle seats and you and the child aren't going to be together. But at American Airlines, they say they are now spending considerable amounts of time on this issue, trying to come up with a system. They're developing it right now to make sure the kids under 15 are seated with the adults. Delta, though, says they do it on a case-by-case basis. The point that the airlines are making, though, is that it's better if they do come up with an idea beforehand, because you do it at the gate.
Yeah,
parents are kicked off. They're yelling that they're not going to get. Then they're going on board and saying, sir, do you mind switching with this parent?
Yeah.
And it just clogs everything up and delays the flight. So they would rather do this, try to figure it out beforehand.
Alex Stone, ABC News. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Better up.
All right. To the phones, 312-981-7200. Has this happened to you? It has. I've been in the middle of this before, and it is not pretty. And there are horror stories out there of kids getting separated from their parents on board the aircraft, and then, or kids not being properly managed because they're two rows ahead, and it's 8 to 80 there in terms of how old the kids are who are causing problems. But let's get to your phone calls at 312-981-7200. But first, traffic and weather. Here is Lauren Lapka. Thank you, Kevin. I thought that was excellent.
Thanks. You're welcome.
You're welcome. All right, let's talk to people right now. 312-981-7200. This story is pretty amazing, that airlines now are having to deal with a petition that has been put out by the Consumer Reports people. They have an online advocacy program, and there's a petition with 50,000 people already signed it that want to stop this idea of no seat assignments if you're flying with kids. So people are going out and they're buying the most basic ticket to get on an airplane, the lowest airfare class, which does not come with a seat assignment. And they're traveling everybody, and they want to get the cheapest ticket because maybe there's five people going, mom, dad, and three kids. But now it turns out that those are middle seats predominantly, and you can't get the parents to sit with the kids, including a horror story, which is making everybody crazy, about a two-year-old who had to sit in a middle seat in between two complete strangers. Now, Mary is a gate agent for American Airlines, one of the airlines that's right in the middle of all of this. And Mary, explain what happens here. You must have seen this.
I've seen situations like this where maybe kids are separated. When they come to us, we do everything we can to get a child with a parent. If we have to split them two by two or three by one, as long as the kids are sitting with the parents. I will see that a lot of times parents will come when we're done boarding. And that's the situation that you're probably talking about. We're done boarding. They come late to the gate. There's nothing we can do at that point. We have to wait until they get on board, and then the flight attendants will work with them to switch people out. I see it time and time again. Everyone goes out of their way to help parents with children.
Shouldn't there be a deal, though, where the parents are, if you're flying with children under whatever the certain age is, and you tell me what the appropriate age would be for this, but you can't get one of those tickets if you want to fly, if you're flying with kids, because it asks you, right, how many kids are you flying with every time you're online,
right,
making the reservation. So,
right.
I understand why they want to do it, because it is the cheapest ticket. They're not really thinking the thing out. may not be, maybe now they will be, but they haven't until this point, and then they get surprised by it. So what would be an appropriate age to cut that off at? Where, kids, do you think, in your experience?
Well, I do know that parents have no problem when we had an age limit of unaccompanied minors to let them fly at 12 years old by themselves.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. I personally would like to have my kids with me, and everyone that purchases a basic economy has the option of purchasing seats, and I think that they can take advantage of that too.
It is interesting how that the horror stories are making out, which it always, that's how it goes.
Right.
It's not a good story unless it's a horror story.
Exactly.
That are making it out. But you're saying that as a gate agent and an American, you're able to try to diffuse the situation. You ever find a situation where you couldn't fix it?
Only when people are already on board.
And then you have to
I'll have only emergency row seats left. And if I have kids, those can go for basic economy. Getting into an emergency row can be $70, $75. I will give them out to get people to give up their seats so I can put parents with their kids in those non-emergency row seats.
I've always wondered this. So the emergency row seats, I know that if you have a certain status on the airline or you buy the bigger, fancier ticket, you can book that seat. But a lot of those seats are left open right at the end so you guys can move things around.
Right.
And spiff your frequent
flyers. We always do it. I'll pull people out of their seats. If I have no options, I will pull people out of their seats before they board. I'll take their seat away and put them in another seat. We do this all the time. And that horror story is probably one isolated incident. And that's the one that everyone's going to use as 2-year-old example.
The 2-year-old flying by herself. Yes, that's a bad situation. And I don't think that the airline in that particular case handled it very well. All right.
No,
thank you very much, Mary. Appreciate it. Thanks for everything you do. That's one of the great, horrifying jobs that is undersung. I can only imagine being a gate agent, like when you're going to work, and you're like, okay, just got to gird yourself for whatever the next 8 hours are going to bring. Steve, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I was just saying, there's a level of personal responsibility when you buy the ticket. The rules are right there in front of you. It says, if you're going to do this fare, you don't get a seat assignment, you don't get a bag, you don't get this, you don't get that. And you like the previous caller said, you are given the opportunity to buy a seat. I know on United, you can even get your once they assign the seat about 24 hours prior. If you do not like the one you have, you can actually still buy a seat.
You can upgrade.
Or still buy a seat. So you say your child is seated in the middle seat, and you see the one seat next to them still empty, and you can purchase that seat. So you'd be, maybe to the child, you'd have to pay $12, $15, $18 for the seat. But you can get a seat on the aisle next to them.
Right.
I guess it's just, I look at this, I'm a flight attendant. I look at it as a level of personal responsibility. When you buy the ticket, you kind of know what's coming at you. And it will not even let you buy that ticket unless you flip a little button on the website that says, I understand this is it. Now, next to that, I do have a great story that a flight attendant told me once when you can't get someone to move and you can't get somebody to move and you have to get a child with their parent and you sit them in between those two strangers and you go, you're not going to throw up again, are you? And usually right at that point, everyone's like, oh, no, sure, I'll move. I'll get the parent with them. I'll move.
That is awesome.
That's just my two cents.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. Sarah, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hey, bro. So I'm really confused because I flew American this summer from Chicago to Phoenix with my husband and my two daughters, who were 5 and 7. And I looked at the website beforehand, the American. I'm like, what do they do if, you know, with the seat thing? And it even said on the site, do not pick your seat, that the system will identify that you have minors and will make sure that the minor is sitting with an adult in your party. And both ways, we paid the basic fare. I didn't pick tickets or pick seats. And 48 hours beforehand, they send you an email, and here are your seats. And yes, we were separated.
But 2 and 2?
But I was, yeah, 2 and 2.
Yeah.
And actually, on the way back, we were 2 and 2 just across the aisle from each other.
Well, but
no issues whatsoever.
And you know what will happen, though? Now, this has happened, I know, to many a family. It's when you got when it's two parents, two kids, who sits with the two kids? Like, if you get the 3 and the 1, like an aisle and then the 3 across, is it you or your husband who's going to sit with the kids?
Well, I'll tell you what, I got stuck with the puker on the way home.
Worse than that. There is nothing worse. Or the screamer. My daughter used to do that. Get on the plane and just start screaming at the top of her lungs. At one point, we actually landed, and she was sitting next to me. I was on the aisle, and she was sitting in the middle seat. And she was, I don't know, like 5 or something at the time, 4 or 5. She unbuckles her seatbelt, gets past me, and starts running down the aisle as the plane has just touched down. The nose gear had just touched the runway. We're still doing about 50 miles an hour, slowing up, and she takes off. Because at that point, I'm just holding on to the side, you know, to the armrests and screaming. So she goes, and a flight attendant actually had to unbuckle herself and throw herself on her, like, you know, she was coming down the aisle. My God, flying with kids is so
great.
Much. Oh, aren't they the best? That I mean,
but it was on the website. I clearly read. You know, they said, "Don't pick your seats. We will put you together."
Yeah. All right. So it worked out for you. That's not American. And America's trying to do that. Yeah. One of the problems are not American and United at this point, although there is no policy, specific policy that has to be enforced here. It's some of the other lower budget carriers that don't have as sophisticated a booking system as those guys do.
I get that.
Especially international airlines have to have, for a lot of reasons, really sophisticated systems. So they have to know. They're very, very well aware of who's flying. And if you have a known traveler number, which you can get for your kids, too, that is that's a really important thing to have, because that will make everything easier for you. So,
All right.
Thank you very much. It's a great story.
Thanks,
Sarah. Yep. Nobody wants to be next to the puker. No matter under any circumstance. Yeah, on a plane, the worst circumstance.
At a bar, too.
At a bar, right, anywhere down the street. I had actually on a train, on an L, on the red line, I had that happen to me. I was sitting next to this girl for like 5 stops, and she seemed fine. She seemed totally fine. And
they always do. It's always a calm before the storm sometimes.
And then, boom, right on my left knee.
Ew.
Oh, I could not get home fast enough. All right. We're going to tell you the top 3 things you need to know at 5 o'clock. All right, my friends, right now, these are the 3 things you need to know at 5 o'clock. Number 1 being the winter storm that didn't actually happen. We thought yesterday when we were talking to Demetrius Ivory and to Rick DeMaio, we thought that we were initially, Demetrius, we thought we were going to go at 48 inches. Then we talked to Rick DeMaio a couple hours later. He goes, this storm seems to be turning. And here is Demetrius Ivory from the 3 o'clock hour today telling us exactly what happened.
The snowfall forecast, which was a good forecast at, 4 to 8 into yesterday, is now down to, maybe 1 in some areas, maybe 4 in other areas. I would think it might be the other way of looking at it. Well, what's going on with the weather? I mean, our biggest snowfall this season, 4.5 inches. And like you said, that was Halloween. That wasn't even, that was fall. I think what the computers are doing is saying, hey, it's winter, it's Chicago, this is what you get. But we just keep kind of getting the lower numbers.
Right, which is, I think, particularly great news. But it's still, Lauren, screwing up the traffic times, is it not?
I mean, a little, I would expect worse normally. But again, it's only just slightly starting around the city and northern areas. So
in terms of getting tighter than it would normally be.
Right. You could definitely tell that areas south are much worse because, you know, parts of I-57, the Bishop Ford are even backed up. But the worst, like we're seeing a 35-minute delay just on I-80/94 east. So that alone says something.
And right, because you're getting that lake effect, too.
Right.
Getting, it always snows. God has decided that he's not particularly happy with that corner of Lake Michigan and always dumps as much snow as possible or whatever the worst meteorological thing that can happen happens there and in Rockford.
It's like the mat that you sweep all the dust under to hide.
Yes, exactly. That's right. That is what Mother Nature or God, I don't know. I'm not even sure which deity to assign this to, but that's what they do. It's right there on the corner. Right there, just south of the Port of Chicago, as you head toward Hammond and then into Gary, it's right bang. That's just hit that thing. And then somehow it's sort of left, right, left hand, right hand. And then, you know, up in Rockford, they go, you know what? I'm not happy about this either. All right. Number two, most important thing that you need to know about today is that the former governor, Rob Blagojevich, you may remember him. He's back home. He's here in Chicago. And his lawyers were at the ARDC today, that's the group that's a government agency that registers and disciplines lawyers. And they either give them their licenses or they take their licenses away. And Sheldon Sarosky, the attorney for Rob Blagojevich, is there appealing the removal of Rob Blagojevich's law license after he got a felony.
The mistake which Governor Blagojevich may have made was people on his behalf asked for campaign donations too close in time to those requests. But he never shook anyone down. He never took advantage of anyone. And that's why he should not be disbarred.
Do you think there's any chance that he isn't disbarred?
I have no idea. That's up to the Supreme Court.
Okay. I think there's an important point. And again, with all due respect to Mr. Sarosky, who's an excellent lawyer. I say that because, you know, this is this town. He did shake people down. He was convicted of shaking people down. He didn't successfully shake them down because he never got the money that he wanted because people were onto him and the government was listening and the government actually was in contact with some of those people after they'd been shaken down. So it didn't, he never got the money, but he tried. And I'm sorry, that you can't do as the governor of the state of Illinois.
Yeah, it's just like there is attempted murder charges for
yes.
a reason.
And then finally, the health and human, the number three is the number one, I should say, is the coronavirus. And this is the Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar explaining where we are in the United States with it.
The immediate risk to the general American public remains low. But as we have warned, that has the potential to change quickly. There is now community transmission in a number of countries, including outside of Asia. That's deeply concerning, and community spread in other countries will make successful containment at our borders harder and harder. That's why we've already been working closely with state, local, and private sector partners to prepare for mitigating the virus's potential spread in the United States, because we will likely see more cases here, as we have said throughout this episode.
Okay. See, it was like, hey, don't worry about it today. 2 weeks from now, look out. All right. So people are getting ready for spring break. Spring break is starting essentially within another week or two, right? And it's going to run all the way until the first week of April. What do you do if you've got tickets to take the kids somewhere in spring break? Do you want to get on the airplanes? Do you not want to get on the airplanes? Peter Greenberg will be here, the travel guru. He will be here to explain how you can get out of certain deals. That's coming your way right after traffic and weather with Lauren Lapka. Peter Greenberg joins us right now. He is the official travel editor of the Rokan Show. That is an unpaid position, Peter, in case you're wondering. You're the host of Ion Travel, which is heard Saturday afternoons here on WGN. It'll be 2 to 4 because of sports conflicts, but 2 to 4 on this Saturday, and travel editor for CBS News. All right, well, now, we just played some tape of the Health and Human Services Director, explaining where the coronavirus is here in the United States in terms of we've seen a couple cases of human-to-human transmission. We do not have the same sort of problems that they're having in Italy and Iran and Japan and South Korea and, of course, China and some other parts of Southeast Asia, too, but the numbers, they know they've got a problem. They just haven't been able to actually cull the numbers yet. It's eventually going to come here, they think, in terms of human to human. It's just a matter of time, not a matter of if it's going to happen. So if you have a family and you're thinking about taking them on a trip for spring break, going somewhere, and you start to get a little worried about it, what can you do?
Well, here's the deal. We're looking at the entire Chinese outbound market, which is the largest in the world. We're talking 150 million people on lockdown. That market has collapsed. And it's not just collapsed in the region, it's collapsed worldwide. So that's your first problem. You have airlines now cutting capacity, or in many cases, eliminating routes through the end of May. We're talking hundreds of thousands of airline seats, revenue that the airlines will never recoup. That's significant. It's staggering because it's not just the airlines, it's the hotels, it's the cruise lines, it's the restaurants, it's retail, it's all the associated jobs in the travel industry, which happens to be the largest in the world. Now, having said that, it hasn't hit Cleveland yet, and it hasn't hit Wyoming yet. As you said, it has not really made a big impact in the U.S. other than the economic hit. So if you're planning a spring break, keep in mind that the airlines that are giving away waivers or allowing you to rebook without penalty or giving you a full refund, those are the airlines that are canceling those routes to those destinations. But unless United Airlines decides to cancel your flight to Denver because of it, don't count on a refund and don't count on a rebooking without a penalty. And the reason for that is simple. If they're operating the flights, it's going to be relatively safe to go. They're taking a hard look at this on a worldwide level, so much so, I'll give you, there's a little bit of a silver lining in this. Mm-hmm. You know that the airlines right now, both United and American, have had to ground so many of their wide-body flights or planes that were normally used on very long-haul international routes. They want to use the planes, so they're starting to fly 777s between like New York and L.A. or New York and San Francisco, and there's a really good chance that if you bought a coach ticket, you might be sitting in business class anyway now.
Right. So that's a very interesting observation there. Do you think that the airlines, if we get closer here in the next 2 weeks, there starts to be human-to-human transmission of the coronavirus here in the United States, that they will then they'll institute a policy which will create refunds?
Oh, absolutely. They've done a very responsible job when you have severe weather. You see that they do the waivers. This is beyond severe weather. This is impacting a whole lot more people, not to mention passengers, but their own employees. Yes. The airlines will have no choice but to institute a waiver program.
So let's talk about the cruise industry right now.
Yeah.
What is happening to them? Because the most dramatic stories have been on these cruise ships.
Well, there's only been one really dramatic story that played out, and that was on the Diamond Princess that was quarantined in Yokohama, which actually had reported cases. The other ship, the Westerdam, which is cruising around Asia, unable to dock as nobody would let it in, turns out there were no reported cases on that, or no cases that actually displayed. Let's put the numbers into perspective here. There are 365 cruise ships that are now cruising around the world with over 300,000 passengers on board. And guess what? Nothing's going on. Now, that doesn't mean the optics are good. It means people are very worried. And so the cruise lines get to do one thing that a lot of other aspects of the travel industry don't. They get to reposition their assets. They can actually physically move them, which is what they did after 9/11. They moved them out of Europe and moved them back to the United States. They're doing that right now. They're getting out of the Asia Pacific and that whole region. There's not a single U.S.-based cruise line that's out there right this minute, which means excess capacity coming into the market, a lot of great deals, and ships that are going to be, very heavily sanitized.
Are they moving them to routes here in the United States and just doubling up on the routes? What are they doing?
Yeah, they are. They're moving to, like, Mobile, Alabama, and Galveston, and Baltimore, and maybe even Philadelphia. They're going to move ships now to Southern California and increase the Mexico route. So, and, of course, the Caribbean will be jammed because it's seasonal. Yeah, that's what they're doing.
Peter Greenberg is who we're talking to. He's the, as I like to call him, and he doesn't like it at all, the editor-in-chief for the Rokan Show of travel. But I'm changing your title every second. But are they going to places? Are these cruise ships going to places that don't normally have cruise ships and deciding, hey, we're going to go from the Port of Philadelphia to the Caribbean? I mean, are they doing things that aren't? And how would people know how to book those tickets?
Well, they did it the last time after 9/11. They were putting ships in ports that didn't even know they had ports, and yet they got a great drive-to market from people who could then not have to fly over a body of water to get on their ship.
Yeah.
That's probably what's going to happen now. And the people who find out about it through the normal distribution channels, otherwise known as travel agents. You know, 90% of all cruise ship ticket distribution comes from travel agents.
There are still travel agents?
Absolutely.
Yeah. See, that's a surprise to me, but yeah. I'm not a cruise guy. So, but, I people keep telling me, oh my God, you're missing something. Cruises are great. You get over it. It's all going to be fine. And then you get a situation like this. It's like, I almost went like in the winter or in December, I was thinking, well, maybe I will do a cruise. And then bang, it hit me. Like, oh no, now what am I going to do?
But you know what?
Yes. What?
But Ro, here's the deal. Most people get concerned. Some of them get downright scared that they think that a cruise ship is nothing more than a floating steel petri dish.
Yes.
And the bottom line is, if that were the case, we'd have 365 ships under quarantine right now. We don't. Look, basic personal hygiene and common sense plays a big role in this. And what you're seeing some of the cruise lines do, and by the way, they're doing it in a smart way, is they've eliminated, in many cases, you know, the buffets. And it's a la carte dining. And you know what? Not a problem.
Yeah.
It's really that simple.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that they hadn't gone to that before when they were having all those problems. Peter is, just lost Mr. Greenberg while we did that. But Peter, go ahead. What's your question?
Oh, hey, Ro. We're taking a cruise in April of the Mediterranean. We're flying into Barcelona, and then we're going to hit France and Italy. I just wonder, is this coronavirus going to affect tourist areas?
Excellent question. We're getting Mr. Greenberg right back on the line for you to answer that.
Thanks.
We had a bit of a technical, as we like to call it. But now, when is this trip going to be?
Mid-April.
Mid-April. All right. And so this is all in that area that's highly affected. Is there anything? So the question really is there anything that you can do? All right. Let me pass this along to Peter. All right. Here's the question, Peter, is from another Peter, which is, if you're doing a cruise to the Mediterranean that's got Spain and Italy in it, and now you're starting to see this thing, is there anything that you can do to protect yourself and get your money back?
Well, that's the same issue we just talked about with the airlines. What you're going to see cruise lines do, and by the way, it's in their contract, they can substitute ports. They can change itineraries under a force majeure clause. And if you bought the cruise, you'll probably stay on the cruise. You may not be going to Italy. Italy right now is on a lockdown because they have the most reported cases of the coronavirus in Europe. That may change, but right now that's what's happening as of 24 hours ago. So, however, this is different than just the cruise line changing a port because of weather. This is bigger than that. And my guess is they will give you the option of either booking another cruise at no penalty at another time, another itinerary to substitute it for now during the same period of time, or get a full refund.
All right, Peter Greenberg. You can hear him in his own radio show right here on WGN Eye on Travel. That's going to be Saturday from 2 to 4. It's Saturday afternoons. We'll let you know week by week exactly what time it's going to be playing. Peter, thanks as always.
Am I still the editor-in-chief?
Yes, you're editor-in-chief of for Travel of the Rokan Show. Unpaid position. Thank you, Peter Greenberg.
Thank you. Bye.
We have the WGN Northwestern Medicine Newsroom hot and bothered right now. We'll talk to them in 2 minutes.
Tonight, the Blackhawks.
The Chicago Blackhawks.
The St. Louis Blues.
The pregame at 6:30.
I'm John Weideman.
Troy Murray and I will have the puck drop for you at 7 o'clock.
WGN.
Rokan Show, right here, 720 WGN. Coming up, we were just talking about the Bears with, Kevin was playing that audio of the Bears general manager talking about the incredible accuracy and tenacity of our beloved quarterback, Mitch Trubisky. And we will be talking about that in the 6 o'clock hour with our Bears insider, and I'm hope. I think we all have thoughts on that issue. I do not understand a word of what I just heard. But That's not what I want to talk about right now. Do you love your dog? Do you love your cat? Do you love your horse? Now there is a company that will clone them for you for the low, low price of $50,000. That's it. $50,000. You can get Fluffy back after Fluffy has decided to go to that big kitty litter box in the sky. This story, it starts with a story out of Escondido, California, in which this family was walking with their Labrador retriever, Marley, as a young pup. And Marley got apart from the family and encountered, as the family was going up the trail, the hiking trail, this is why I don't hike, they encountered a rattlesnake.
This was in 2014, and Alicia was about 4 months pregnant. Suddenly saw Marley dart out in front of me.
Saw this really big stick, and so I was focused on grabbing that, and I didn't even see the snake until Marley came and was clawing.
Right. And was then bitten by the rattlesnake. And Marley died. Very sad story. But now, $50,000 later, they got Marley back. Because they got the dog cloned. And this is that was like the perfect dog. Now, I gotta say, I love dogs. Lukewarm on the cat, but I love dogs. I don't know that I would pay $50,000, and I've loved my dog, all my dogs. You know, when you get that security question, which is your favorite pet? I can't answer. It's like, what's your favorite child? I don't know the answer. I love them all. And that's why I put down, love them all. And so now you can break into my bank account. I don't think I would want to pay $50,000 to do that, though. You know, because don't you want to like have the experience of a new dog? They may not be the perfect dog. And how do you know that when you get the clone, that the clone is going to behave exactly like, may look exactly like, but... there's nature and nurture here, isn't there?
Pet cemetery situation.
Yeah, right. And then what if you're right? What if all of a sudden, and the clone is, I don't know if the clone is like a perfect copy, because don't they say the clone has got, sometimes the clone has other issues. Sometimes at the very end of the cooking process, there's something else that happens. Some allele moves around, and the next thing you know.
Do you get any guarantees for $50,000?
We're going to talk to the woman who does this, coming up in just a second. And we'll ask all of those questions. And people will call without question at 312-981-7200 and want to know when they can get their pet cloned. Does the pet have to be alive to be cloned? Or if the pet is dead, it can be cloned? Obviously, they're using the DNA from Marley. Marley was no longer alive. And that worked out.
Had a good run.
Apparently not. But like all of a sudden you got, you know, little Fluffy, who's absolutely lovely. And, you know, they're going to clone little Fluffy with using an egg and taking out the genetics of the egg and putting in the new genetics of, the full fluff. And you just hope that when, you know, Fluffy comes out, it's a cute little dog or... How do you know for sure? I mean, this is... This has... So many interesting ramifications when you think about it. And we're doing this with cats and dogs and horses now. The horse industry alone. I mean, that could be a very interesting twist and turn here in the horse industry. Because, you know, right at this point, you're not allowed to do that. But maybe they will be allowed to do it. Maybe at some point the horse industry will change because they want to put these superstars on the track. So you're going to have California Chromes and all the best horses from the last decade running again. Or will you? American Pharoah. Ooh, that's weird. All right, we're going to talk to this woman coming up in just a moment who is the marketing director for this company that does this. For $50,000, you can get your dog, your cat, or your horse cloned. We'll find out what that's all about. But first, here's Lauren Lapka. She's got the traffic and the weather. All right, we were just talking about this story of dog cloning. A story out of San Diego where a family lost their Labrador retriever and to a snake bite, and this dog was such a hero to the family, they were able to get it cloned. And I have a lot of questions. And now we have, I hope, a lot of answers. Melaine Rodriguez is with us, and she is the client service manager for Viagen Pets. And that's the company that's been doing this. Melaine, thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it. Okay.
Yeah.
So if your dog dies, if a dog dies, you can use that dog's DNA even though they're dead, right?
That's right. Under certain circumstances. So it's always best that you take the DNA while the dog is still alive. And it's in the form of just a very small skin biopsy that your vet would take from the dog. And then we grow cells from that tissue. But if the dog does die, there's a very small window of time that the tissues are still alive. So you'd have to get your dog to the vet right away or refrigerate the body of the dog and then get the dog to the vet as soon as possible to have samples taken.
All right. So the dog is going to be an exact copy of dog A is dead. Dog B is going to be an exact copy.
So, yes. So the best way to think about a cloned animal is it's really just simply an identical twin. Their DNA is exactly the same, just like identical twins' DNA would be the same. So they're going to be the same gender. They're, of course, the same breed. They're going to be very similar looking in size, a similar personality, but maybe not exactly the same because they will have been exposed to different things in the environment.
Right. But they will process, theoretically, they would process things similarly, though. Right. I mean, if it's a smart dog, it'll be another smart dog.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We have found that intelligence and temperament are very highly genetically linked. So you would expect those things to be very similar in the cloned dog.
How many dogs have you cloned?
We have cloned over 200 dogs now.
Wow. And are there things that can go wrong, and what do you do about that?
So the cloning process is very similar to in vitro fertilization. You know, we make cloned embryos, we put those into a surrogate dog, and if all goes well, she'll get pregnant, and then she'll give birth to a puppy. What could go wrong is the surrogate dog may not get pregnant right away. So like IVF, you may not get pregnant the first try. So if mom doesn't get pregnant that first try, we'll transfer another set of embryos.
And you build a number of them for this eventuality, potentially. Right.
Right. So it's just a flat fee for the cloning, no matter how many embryo attempts it takes.
And it's $50,000. $50,000. Okay. $50,000.
Yes.
And then now what happens if dog A dies? You clone it to dog B. Dog B dies. Can you continue to clone dog A?
Absolutely. So when we do the first step of preserving the DNA from the dog that you want to clone, these cells can be preserved for decades, and there's cells left over after cloning. So you could go back to those original cells and clone that dog 20 years later if you wanted to. So you could clone dog A again and again. You could also clone dog B. So you could clone a clone if you wanted to.
Is that extra?
Well, it's the same. It's the same cost, and we've actually had clients that have cloned the clone.
Okay, so that would be another $50,000 to clone the clone.
Right.
Now, can the clone breed?
Yes, absolutely. A clone dog is really just like any conventionally bred dog. It will have the same breeding potential that the original dog had.
Okay, and you do cats too, right?
That's right.
And how many cats have you done?
We've cloned quite a few, not as many as dogs. We certainly have more dog cloning clients, but yeah. We do have a waiting list for cats. But we do a lot of this DNA preservation, that first step toward cloning, and we've done that with thousands of pets.
Oh, boy. Now, horses. You also do horses, right?
We do. Horse cloning is 85,000.
Oh, yeah. I know some guys on the south side would like to clone a few horses along the way. American Pharoah, what would be the worst thing? All of a sudden a guy comes in, he's got tissue samples of American Pharoah, and they want to give it to you, and they go, this horse was bred in Australia, we don't know where it came from. I mean, I wonder about that in the professional racing, you know, the sports racing business, thoroughbred racing business, mm-hmm. because there are so many rules about how these horses are bred. But you mm-hmm. wonder if, because they don't do it, you know, they don't do it by artificial insemination or anything. Mm-hmm. It's called live cover. You have to have a boy and a girl, and they have to, you know, mate. And if they mate, they don't, you know, there's all kinds of math and mechanics and dollar amounts that are exchanged in all of this. But it's very mm-hmm. specific. But if all of a sudden you could start to see that you could clone the best horses of this generation, then you then, you know, maybe it would be like a superstar track, superstar other kind of, you know, may save the horse racing industry. Is that in your, I mean, right now, obviously you're not doing thoroughbreds, I would assume, but you may be doing them after their trail. What kind of, what's the horse stock that's coming to you?
So we actually are cloning some racehorses. So even though they can't be registered and they can't race, they can do other types of things. Like we've cloned a really great racehorse, and the original was a gelding, so he could not reproduce. Right. And now the cloned animal is a stallion, and he's breeding, and he's generated lots and lots of offspring. So these are valuable genetics that would have been lost because the original horse was gelded, and now these genetics are back. But that horse can't race, but it can do things like it's competing in barrel racing. So things like that, other types of events. One neat aspect now, is if you could clone the best of the best racehorses, they couldn't compete, in a regular horse race, but maybe some special kind of horse race where it's just a lot of cool clones racing together against each other.
I'm sure there are tracks that would be interested in doing that, actually, because right? But the NTRA the organization that oversees thoroughbred racing probably would not be happy with this. Now right. The clone. There are some of the best horses, you know, of all times that were geldings, right? So they can't breed afterwards, mm-hmm. and the owners are very sorry that they gelded the horse, but they needed, you know, but he was frisky early, and they needed to do something to get his, right. to get his attention. That's why that happens in the industry. My question is, if you have that gelding that's got, you know, great paper, bold type as they call it when they're very successful, mm-hmm. and now you have a clone of that, and that clone is breeding, is that legal in the thoroughbred industry as far as you know at this moment?
So it's not allowed. They wouldn't register the offspring of a clone.
Okay, so not mm-hmm. yet. Is mm-hmm. the way I would look right. at that. That's interesting. Back to right. the dogs. That's what most people are going to do. But I just want to, you know, as a horseman, mm-hmm. I want to figure this thing out. So, yeah. All right. Sue has a question for you very quickly. We're talking about Lane Rodriguez from Viagen, and they're the people that are cloning pets. Go ahead.
Hi, Ro. Enjoy your show.
Thank you, Sue.
Interesting concept. But my question is, if dog A dies of a disease, say a cancer right. type of thing, mm-hmm. but you clone the dog, will dog B also then develop that disease?
Oh, great question.
Yeah, that is a really good question, and one we get a lot, and it's great that you're thinking of these things in advance. So the answer is potentially. If the cancer or any illness is genetically linked, then that clone dog is going to have those same genetics and that same potential to develop that illness at some point. But you know, a lot of cancers, we don't really know what the cause is. Some are environmental, some are genetic, some are a mixture of both. But that potential could be there.
Right. So.
Okay. And
yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead, Sue.
No, just very, very interesting. It may make people, you know, consider that possibility.
Yeah, one would imagine, but there are people who are so crazy in love with their pets, and if they got a good 7 years or 8 years out of that pet, I don't know if they have the means or they would think it would be worth $50,000 to do this, which is what it would cost. But, you know, there are people with means, and they, you know, they love their little Shih Tzu, and, you know, maybe that's that dog died early of a rare cancer. But a lot of these, I mean, you know, when you people who have a love for a certain breed of dogs, they know what those risks are going in, because there are certain dogs that are more prone than others to different things, whether it's hip dysplasia or it's cancer, all those kinds of things. So it is a pretty I think what we're playing with here more than anything else, and Sue, thanks for the call, is the emotion that surrounds the relationship with the dog, right? I mean, that would be no other reason to do it, because there are a lot of dogs. There's shelter dogs and all kinds of other, and you never know. You can sometimes, you know, find a better dog. But it's people who are really totally connected, Melaine, who are going into this.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's the only way to really do it. All right. So it's 50 grand for the dog. It's 50 grand for the cat.
$35,000 for a cat.
$35,000 for the cat. Mm-hmm. See, I know it. I just knew it had to be less, but you do have people, but you said you got like hundreds of samples, right? That are starting. You haven't tried
thousands.
As many.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can actually preserve the DNA now for $1,600. And that gives you the opportunity to keep these cells stored and maybe clone the dog or cat 10 years from now. And we hope that the price will be less expensive down the road.
Oh, yeah, or more. Because you already have it going. All right. Malene Rodriguez. So if people want to learn more about this, it's viagenpets.com. That's V-I-A-G-E-N, viagenpets.com. Malene, thanks for putting up with me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. Now, speaking of cloning athletes, how much would Mitch Trubisky go for? That's the question. We're going to answer that question on the other side, because at the quarterback's combine, Ryan Pace was asked a question about what he sees in his great quarterback, and are the Bears going to be moving toward any other kind of solution at the quarterback position? And our man at Hallis Hall, Adam Hoge, is going to join us in the 6 o'clock hour, and we are going to answer that question as clearly as we can. Rokan Show, right here, 720 WGN. I just want to check one other thing here. There's craziness on the roadways here because of the snow and the sleet. Tomorrow morning, though, is going to be much worse. So if you're planning this event isn't as bad as was predicted initially, but it's still, as Lauren has been telling you, pretty crazy, right?
Yeah, definitely better than I was certainly expecting compared to what we've seen with the few snow events we've had in the past few months. Definitely worse on the south side, where the snow is already said to be worse in terms of
south suburbs. Right? Like the Bishop Ford has been particularly bad.
Yeah, outbound Bishop Ford really bad right now. Parts of I-80, I-80, 94, they're better right now, but do expect things over there to be slower and, you know, potentially more accidents in terms of people slipping off the roads.
Right, because of we were told earlier that there will be some ice buildup overnight here and tomorrow, especially in those areas, but all over the roadways from basically the Indiana line all the way to Wisconsin.
And of course, obviously, with the lakeshore flood warning, you need to look out over there because the winds are really, really strong and will be getting stronger throughout the next 24 hours.
Right. So tomorrow morning's commute, we are being told, is going to be pretty hellish. So if you have a commute planned for tomorrow and you have an opportunity to take the train, our weather folks are advising you and our traffic folks are advising you to consider actually taking the train as opposed to driving tomorrow if that's feasible, because the morning rush there will be more snow tomorrow, lake effect snow, and that will affect downtown Chicago. Again, it's not going to be a huge snow machine, like, you know, we're not going to get the initially forecast 48 inches, but we're going to get maybe an inch, maybe two, but the issue is really going to be the slick roadways and some visibility early in the morning. And then again, the wind is creating that problem. So this is not, even though this turned out, thankfully, and I'm a big fan of not snowing, not the event that we anticipated it to be. It's still going to be a mess on the roadways tomorrow. So we want you to know that. Now, speaking of messes, coming up, our own Adam Hoge is going to be joining us. He's our man at Hallis Hall. Now, why are we talking about Hallis Hall? It's the end of February. Football doesn't start for at least, you know, what is it, five and a half months from now. Pitchers and catchers report, as we like to say, at the end of July for the football season. But there are some interesting developments at the quarterback position. The quarterback combine was being held today, where they get to look.
Draft combine. Scouting combine is what they call it.
Yep. Where we get to look at these college kids. Joe Burrow was there, was he not?
He was.
Joe Burrow, who's expected to be the number one pick. Cincinnati is expected to take them as the number one pick. He's an Ohio kid. It's like it's a perfect marriage there.
Well, I don't know if anybody really wants to play for the Bengals, but for the Bengals, it makes a ton of sense.
Right. But, I mean, he could be a great hero.
Mm-hmm. Although, grew up about 2 hours outside of Cincinnati.
His dad, unfortunately, said he'd love to play for the Bengals right after he won the national championship with LSU, which kind of locked him down into that pick. But then Joe tried to throw a little cold water on that. Did he not? Did Joe Burrow not say, well, you know, I mean, maybe they don't love me. I don't know. Because, you know, wouldn't the New England Patriots be a better play for him? But he won't last that long. right? Unless New England decides they want to trade up.
I mean, there's like a 99.999% chance that Bengals will draft Joe Burrow.
Right.
But I don't know why they wouldn't.
But what would the Patriots give up to get into that?
So the number one spot?
Yeah.
Their top draft pick for the next 4 years?
Yeah.
5 years?
It's interesting, though, because they've become used to it. And there's all kinds of rumors about Mr. Brady, too, today, mm-hmm. about where he's going to land. And we're just hoping that it's the newly minted Las Vegas Raiders. Because if he goes there, then there's a possibility that Derek Carr will be available to us. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, that opens up the possibility, no doubt.
Okay. All right. Mr. Hogue will join us and explain all of those things. But what's really interesting is the tape that we're going to play with Mr. Hogue of both the head coach of the Chicago Bears and his plans for the offense for next year, and the general manager of the Chicago Bears, who's still holding on to the notion that Mitch Trubisky is one of the great skilled quarterbacks of his or any other generation. We will talk about that. But first, Lauren gives us another look at the roadways.
You want traffic too?
Yes, I want traffic and weather, yes.
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV. We need him tonight.
That's for sure.
That is for sure, Kevin. All right, everybody. Where's the bouncing ball with the lyrics? All I know is that T-formation part. Been singing that song my entire life, and I still don't exactly know the lyrics. Our man at Hallis Hall is Adam Hogue. And the NFL quarterbacks combine, the prospects draft prospect combine, is being held, and the Bears establishment is down there looking at quarterbacks, because every team goes and looks, right? That's nothing new. That's nothing controversial. That doesn't tell us anything about what they actually want to do. But I want to play this again. Kevin's been playing this in his sports all day. This is, and I want Mr. Hogue's reaction to this. This is Ryan Pace, the general manager who drafted Mitch Trubisky, who traded up from number 3 to number 2, giving up basically the immediate future for the Bears to get Mitch Trubisky instead of Patrick Mahomes, instead of Deshaun Watson. Here is what he's saying about his quarterback.
Yeah, I think he's accurate, he's athletic, he can process, his work ethic, how he is as a teammate, those are all things that come to mind.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I will give you how he is as a teammate. He seems like a guy yeah. who's all about the team, wants to do the right thing. I will give you work ethic even. I think he probably has that. I don't know that for sure, but I'm assuming he does. But accuracy? Accuracy? I don't think so. And the idea that he's processing? I don't think so either. So is there anybody, I mean, is the press corps is taking that audio in, Adam Hogue? Is everybody kind of side-eyeing each other? Like, wait, what?
Well, yeah, let me, here's what happened. So, Ryan Pace expressed his belief in Mitch Trubisky once again, which he did at the end of the regular season. I followed up a couple minutes later by saying, when people hear you, this is the second time you've done this since the season ended. When people hear that, they're going to want to obviously ask why, like why you still have that belief. And he gave an okay answer, but then Stacey Dales from the NFL Network followed up after that and said, what are his strengths specifically? Because we're trying to all understand like why this belief is still being voiced so strongly. And then that's what you just heard in that clip. And I think maybe he just got to the point where he defaulted into like his old draft evaluation of Mitch Trubisky, because specifically when it comes to the idea of processing, in his own press conference today, Ryan Pace had questioned some of the processing that Mitch Trubisky does. And about an hour later, when Matt Nagy met with the media, he talked about how that's like the number one thing that Trubisky needs to improve this offseason. It didn't sound great in that clip you just played, but I do think they all understand that Mitch needs to get a lot better at how he's looking at the field and processing what he's seen.
You know, the way rookie deals work, and I don't want to get this overcomplicated, but the gist of it is you get 4 years of rookie control, and then heading into the fourth season before the year begins, a team can elect to option a fifth-year deal in that rookie contract, meaning by May, if Ryan Pace wanted to commit a fifth year to Mitch Trubisky, he could do that. They could pick up a fifth-year rookie option. Okay. He wouldn't commit to that today.
All right, let's listen to that.
Ryan, do you understand how waiting to make a decision on the fifth-year option could create some doubt about the team's commitment to Mitch?
Yeah, I don't think it's uncommon, Brad, and I think it's just those are things that just we'll just keep inside and internal with us. We have more pressing needs right now for us, and again, that's not the trigger date isn't until May, so we have time on that.
If I'm Mitch's agent, I'm like, Mitch, we got to look at San Diego or the LA Chargers or whatever the hell they're called now. Now, here is Matt Nagy on the Mitchell Trubisky fourth year.
This will be, you know, his going into his fourth year. And for us, if we all think that that's what we want from him from last year, then we're fooling ourselves. He knows that. We know that. But at the same time, we need to be real what's around him. And that's where we're at. And I know it's hard sometimes for all of us to understand that. And you see what's going on, with the instant gratification now. But there is a process for us. And so now I do know that Mitch is very hungry he understands that we want him to play better. He understands that we want to coach better. So now we cannot worry and dwell about what happened last year. If you do that, you get stuck in mud. We can't do it.
Okay, coach. Okay. It's clean slate. All right. Okay. All right. Now, here's the part that really gets me. This really gets me because the coach is still saying, well, he's got a lot of development yet to go.
I think some more direction in regards to the process. And then, and when I say that, is under he is young still. And I know we keep saying that, but he is. But you also now you give direction, and now he needs to follow it.
Oh my God! All right, stop. He's young still. He's Patrick Mahomes. Okay, Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes were in his draft class. Patrick Mahomes won the Super Bowl single-handedly won the Super Bowl, and Deshaun Watson was in the playoffs. I don't understand how Matt Nagy can stand there and say that and not try to kill me.
So here's the reality of the situation, and this is what I think everybody's struggling to accept. But when you draft a quarterback number two overall, that guy is supposed to be what Patrick Mahomes has become, and unfortunately he's just not that. And Mitch is most likely going to end up where – the majority of quarterbacks end up, which is in that middle tier. I think that's most franchises are where the Bears are, and that they're always searching for that Patrick Mahomes. Now, it's extra frustrating because he was on the table, and they could have had him, but they don't. And so now they need to figure out, can Mitch at least become a good second-tier quarterback that they can win with? And if they're really going to look for a replacement, are they really going to find somebody who's out of that second tier? And the most likely answer to that question is no, because if a quarterback is available, well, whether it's possibly Derek Carr or Nick Foles or Andy Dalton or any of these guys we keep talking about, those guys are all second-tier quarterbacks. That's why they're available. So that's the tough situation the Bears are in right now, and it's the tough situation most NFL franchises are in.
Adam, you're down in Indianapolis for the scouting combine. Most of the workouts will get going in a couple days here. Tight end's a big-time position to need offensive line. Any names that if anybody does want to tune in and kind of dial in on the combine throughout Sunday, who should we be looking at?
Yeah, well, one of the guys I really like is Harrison Bryant, Florida Atlantic. He was the top tight end in college football last year, winning that award. Cole Kmet from Notre Dame. Local kid who went to St. Vider High School. He's certainly somebody to keep an eye on. If you want to go a little bit farther down the list, maybe Bryson Hopkins, who played at Purdue. But I also think you should keep your eye open on potential free agents, like Austin Hooper is becoming a free agent from the Atlanta Falcons, and somebody, Hunter Henry from the Chargers is somebody you can keep an eye on. And then maybe, and this is something I've been pushing, Zach Ertz could be available via trade from the Philadelphia Eagles a perfect fit in this offense, exactly what the Bears would want. Now, that would be a trade. You'd have to give something up for him and something pretty significant. But I can tell you this. The Bears are going to upgrade their tight end position one of those three ways.
You know, it's great to have all these weapons. They actually had some weapons. Obviously, the tight end position was the weakest of the receiver positions this year. But they have guys who can actually catch the ball. They have guys who can move with the ball. They have a running back who I think is going to be so much better in his second year now that he's going to get some NFL experience under his belt. And he's just one. He reminds me, I can't believe I'm saying these words, but in terms of his tenacity, this young kid at running back, he's like Walter Payton in the sense that you can't take him down on first contact. No one has been able to do it. I have not seen it once this season where unless he was in the backfield and got totally mauled, if he's moving forward, that first contact, he's going to make extra yardage no matter what it is. He's going to make a yard, might be 4 yards. He drags people. He dragged six guys. I mean, he's that kind of a player. So there are weapons. And, wait a second. Hold on. Let me play this. This is where Nagy explains who's going to call the offense this year.
Yeah, I'll be calling the plays, and we do have a lot of guys that have called plays. And so for me, y'all don't get to see it because you're not in the meetings with us, but a lot of times we'll talk through, you know, why would you make this call or that call? And that's growth in myself, too, as a play caller.
All right, that's all I want of that.
Yeah.
He's going to call his own place. All right, we got to go because we got Blackhawks hockey. But I'm just going to leave you on that note. Everybody,
okay.
I want to enjoy yourselves. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. All right, here he goes. Chicago Blackhawks hockey is coming your way in 2 little minutes.